Hello and welcome to another episode of the Classic Pinball Podcast. My name is George and today I'm joined by my co-host Dave. Hello, Dave.
Hello, George, and welcome from Jamestown, Rhode Island. And greetings from Jamestown, Rhode Island. Beautiful
day.
Yeah,
we're a little late. I stepped on you. We're a little late. Post Pintastic. A little bit of a vacation week. Just a lot of junk going on. We won't get into it. We'll just leave it at that.
Let's just say life gets in the way sometimes.
Life does get in the way. But here we are. We're going to do a post-Pintastic wrap-up. I'm going to start with something positive. We'll get into some of the not-so-positive things in a little bit. Dave, I want you to start. We're going to go in chronological order. Why don't you tell the audience about the podcast seminar that you were part of on Thursday night, the first, I guess, day or evening of Pintastic?
Yeah, that was fun. It was just three of us. It was myself, Joe, and Lauren. Lauren was
who,
the
Joe LeMayer?
That's the one.
And yep. Lauren Gray, is that her last name?
I think it is. That sounds right. I think Backhand Pinball Podcast, I believe. I think that's what it is.
No, isn't Backhand the people who did the
Backbox.
Yeah. Isn't Backhand the Mark, the guy who did the video production?
Oh, you're right.
Okay. Yeah, yep. We'll get to him in a minute.
Okay.
So tell us about the seminar. Good, bad, otherwise?
It was interesting. Dave Marston got all our stats ahead of time and put them on the board, and then he came up to each of us and just asked us, "So, what makes your podcast special that you'd want to hear it or listen to it over any other ones that are here right now?" And kind of put you on the spot. So it was fun just to kind of, I had no notes or anything. I just kind of spoke from the heart. It's like, well, I said, we don't do anything these other podcasts do. We carved out our own special niche and do classic pinball talk. We talk about a little bit of life, some philosophy, some comedy, and bring it all around. We're not just, other ones do kind of a lot of tournament talk, a lot of new game talk, and we don't do that. So we're something a little, something a little niche, and we have our own little audience for it. So
what did Joe say? He's not on a podcast, is he?
No, he's on a podcast. I even asked him to say, because Joe was saying,
was he even there?
Well, here's the thing. Joe kind of said to me, it's like, you're on a podcast? He said,
oh,
to
that's
me,
right. I forgot he said that to you.
And I said, yeah.
On a dais 3 years ago, right?
Yeah, we were here 3 years ago, Joe, remember? And on top of that, I've been doing this for over 2 years now, but 100 episodes under our belt. How about three years? Okay, 3 years. And I didn't know you were even on one right now, Joe. Are you? Well, no, I'm not. It's like, okay. So what's your point?
Okay.
Pod Kettle Black.
I don't want to dwell on this. Anything of substance come out of it that our audience should know about, or can we move along?
We can move along. It's going to be on YouTube. It's going to be the Pintastic YouTube channel eventually. All these things are on a live feed on Twitch. They're going to be converted to YouTube, including all the seminars that Pintastic did, including this one. So we can all watch it again. And it was a nice little discussion. I made the crowd laugh a little bit because I said, George and I are very old school. We try to do things in person all the time. And the other two said, oh no, we do mostly Zoom stuff, or we do stuff with Duo or whatever, remote, because they have a lot of guests on. I said, no, George and I really don't have guests. But when we do it remotely, we use Zoom as well, but we don't use the video. And they both turned around, looked at me weirdly, like, you guys don't use video on Zoom? They go, no. We're like, George, like I said, George and I are different.
I know what you look like. You know what I look right. like. What?
I mean, okay. I don't need a video call. It's a phone call. What do I need?
As I've said forever, we break every rule.
We break every rule. We like to do it that way. We're different.
let's move to Friday. I arrived on Friday to a whirlwind of activity, and we're going to come to whirlwind in a minute. I had a piece of glass, I think I told the audience, that went from Ohio to New Hampshire, down to Massachusetts. A guy from Middletown, New York, Glenn, bought it. Nice guy. You met him real briefly. Introduced him to Eric. We'll get to him in a minute. Just a lot of junk going on when I first got there, but got that all out of the way. And you and I started playing in the tournament. You want to talk about that for a couple of minutes?
Yeah, sure. That tournament, as soon as I, because we mentioned this tournament on our last show, right? What was going to be in it? We said all the titles,
I think. Yeah, we talked about all the games. I'm going to talk about how well I did or didn't do. So let me begin, and then we'll cut to you.
Sure.
I didn't make the mistake of trying to cram five games in 4 hours on a Saturday. So it was really chill to try to do it on a Friday, kind of do it at your own pace. I took a break, went and played some games, but it was great. I played, after looking at the list, I played old school Sterns. So I was in a Sternament. But that wasn't the game that I did the best on. You having had that firepower at your house that you were restoring, I played that game first, and believe it or not, at the beginning of the tournament, I had the number one score on firepower.
Awesome, George.
Well, I didn't remain there. I dropped to number 11, but I thought that was pretty good, you know, given the talent that was at this show or at this tournament. Go ahead.
I was going to say, at that point, I would cue Curly from the Three Stooges saying, hello, Ma, hello, Pa. It was a great fight. I stood there like this, not for long, though.
Hello, Ma. Hello, Pa. It wasn't much of a fight. I stood like that, but not for long.
Yep.
That's you.
Yeah, I think I have that somewhere.
Yes.
So I played Memory Lane, Big Game, both not well, an Ali, and a Stargazer. I went from beginning at number 18, I think. So in the first 2 hours, I was number 18. Great. By the time the tournament ended, I dropped all the way to number, I think, 72. But I don't think that was too bad, given that I only played one card. And again, there were a lot of very, very good tournament players there.
There were.
That was my story. Not a lot there, but I had a lot of fun. What about you? You, I think, got the Jones and went for it.
I got the Jones, went for it, started handing over my money. You know,
how many cards did you end up playing?
I think I played a total of 4. Kind of like Ohio, but I did better than Ohio and wasn't quite as angry tournament guy, because at least I had no excuse. I was playing classic games. So, but I loved playing. I'd say out of all of them, what really gelled with me, which played close to my stuff, would be their Stargazer. That played really pretty close to mine. I played Big Game. I basically, the first card I did, I played Big Game, Stargazer, Memory Lane, Ali, and Firepower. And Firepower, there was not enough power in that flipper to go around and lock the ball in the top saucer. You could just not get there. So you really couldn't get a multi-ball going. But otherwise, it played pretty well. I didn't really get that good a score on that. Big Game, I needed some more practice on that one. Did pretty not too great in that.
That was a tough game. I did not do well. I got 0 points on Big Game. It's amazing that I even played in the 70s with a zero.
I did okay. I think I did okay on Big Game, because I kept it in the spinner when it was lit, the upper left spinner. I got a couple, you know, 80 percentiles. You know, I got a couple lofty scores on a couple of them that put me within shot of something. I basically was in the top, I don't know, top 13 at one point, I think, which was pretty good, but that's early on, of course. Right. And then when people started coming in, and Then I played another card and I did worse on that card. My, you know, actually my first card I did was the best card. The first, so lesson learned, just do really well the first time and just hope you do better. Just go with that, you know.
Well, you made a mistake too, didn't you? Didn't they ask you, do you want to keep your former score or do you want to keep your new score? And what did you say to me?
And I said, oh, yeah, I'll just take this score here, but I'll take the new score. But you know what, though? They didn't do it because I told it to Eric Stone later on. And he goes, no, I get your cards right here. You submitted the highest score right here. Your first card stuck. The other ones they didn't submit. It's like, okay, good. I guess they decided for me. I don't know. It worked out, you know. So I put my best foot forward that way. I will say, my friend Paul's nephew was there, Benny, and he is, how old is Benny? 21. 21.
Benny, he is really, what's Benny's last name? Bloomstein?
Bloomstein, yep.
Yeah, and, well, I'm going to take a bow. You can take a bow too, but I'm going to take a bow because I told him when we were unloading your Rush game, that, you know, episode, I said, you're really good. You should play in a tournament. Nah, I'm not good enough. You know, he came guns a-blazing, and he's a very good player. He ran into a buzzsaw, but he's a really good player.
He is really good. He's been playing with his father, Stu, in all these home tournaments. There's a lot of home tournaments happening, you know, maybe monthly or whatever. Not real formal, but he's got a lot of exposure to a lot of different games, old and new. And he's got a lot of, he bought a World Poker Tour. He just bought, after this tournament, he did so well, he bought an Iron Maiden for himself. So now he's got,
oh, no kidding.
Yep. So he's
got the bug. I asked him, I said, are you going to play in other tournaments? He said, yes.
Oh yeah. He wound up qualifying all the way through and got to play the final round. And he went up against, Steve Bowden. And I think he just got the jitters a little bit. He won the first game, then he had a lot of house balls. But it was great. I was playing like Mickey from Rocky. I was being his little coach and kind of, you know, telling him, give me little hints and tips and tricks, especially on the classic games, this and that. And I was basically, you know, just in his corner kind of thing and advising him and kind of give me encouragement the whole time. That was fun. I like doing that. I like being the coach like that. That was a lot of fun.
Well, Steve was pretty gracious too.
He was.
I saw,
oh, yeah,
you over there, you know, talking to him. I came over, you know, I introduced myself again. I said, hey, you know, we met in Houston. And it's funny because I said to him, I'm one of the few who's actually played Raza from, you know, that company. Never used the name. And he started chuckling. I said, you know, it's pretty strange. When I did get to play that game in Houston, that five guys were around me and they were asking every question in the world about, you know, whether I liked the game or not. He started laughing. He was like, yep, that's what we did. And now I understand that maybe somebody has bought the rights to that game and might actually put it out. Did you hear that?
I didn't hear that. Tell me more details. What's that about?
I don't know. I kind of heard through the grapevine that, so, you know, they had a public auction of all the assets of the company and that somebody bought the rights to the game. I think, I don't know how they're going to bring that thing out, but you know, stay tuned, I guess.
All right. We will stay tuned.
I'll come back to the tournament in a minute. I'm kind of going chronologically. When did you deliver the whirlwind? Tell the audience about that.
All right, so I had
missed it. I don't know what, I must have been with my friend Jim. I completely missed you guys playing that game, and that must have been when, Friday night?
That,
if you can remember?
No, I can remember. So Maureen and I got there Wednesday. We got there a day early with setup and try to help a little best we can. Just kind of got there really early, get the feel of the place and the hotel room and all the drama that goes on with that. With the hotel rooms there,
so we're gonna come to that in a minute.
Oh yeah, that's later on. But that, you know, little teaser.
That's a teaser.
So all that rigmarole, and then Thursday, people started arriving, bringing games, and I already had a plan with my buddy Dave and Jerry from Pennsylvania. I made a deal with them, with Jerry, that you know, he can buy the whirlwind for me. It was a project game I bought, and I was planning on restoring it down the road, but I have so many games to restore. And it's like, you know, I'm never going to get to this thing. It's like, I'd rather just make a quick nickel on it versus a long dime on it. Make a little, it still sells for a good enough price that's worth buying. And I can make a little on my side for my trouble, and he can do whatever he wants to do with it. So, but I could, he wanted me to bring it to the show, but I don't have the vehicle to easily bring it to the show for the newer type game. You know, I can do it, but it's a real hassle. You take it all apart, and it's, you know, this opening is not big enough in my vehicle at this point. So I said, you really need to come pick it up. So I put it in my neighbor's garage on Wednesday before we left for him to pick up Thursday night. So what he did, he came to the show, did his thing, got his games into the show, brought his games. He brought two games to the show to get him himself in, him and Dave in. And then Thursday night, he went back to where our place is, my neighbor's place, and he picked up the Whirlwind from her in a garage and then drove back to the show. He put it in their hotel room. And his hotel room was all the way in the back. He, you know, third floor, long way walk around. He was walking all the way through the hotel with it. I don't know why, because you're not supposed to have a pinball machine in your hotel room. So I don't know. No one stopped him, but he just kept going.
Well, there was nobody. I mean, we'll get to the hotel security in a minute. But there were few employees in exactly that hotel.
And especially few that actually cared about things. So they let him do it.
So they started working. There's a thread out on Pinside. I'm sure some of our audience has read it. But they started working on this thing in the room, right, on Thursday night?
Yeah, they called it the Whirlwind Ghetto Hotel.
They started calling it the Ghetto Wind.
But the thread is like Whirlwind Hotel Room Ghetto Restoration, something like that on Pinside. And they started working on it. And they didn't have any real tools or any parts. But the game was so close. It was games that was so close to working. Jerry brought with him, just because he knew he was going to try to do this, he brought a known working main board for the game with him. And he threw that in. That took care of a lot of the problems with the game. And now he just had to do a couple little minor things, like some switches and basically a lot of bubble gum and tape. So he lubricated things with, he had like hand lotion that he had in his travel bag.
I saw that. That is the craziest. That's crazy.
Hand lotion, bubble gum, tape. And all in all, he got it working really well.
Well, he got LEDs from the Bushy Brothers.
And he
bought a cheap piece of glass because they broke the glass in the hotel room.
Yeah, they were taking it off and about to clean it or about to do something. And then he put it down on the rug in the hotel room and it just kind of shattered. He put it down on his edge. That was Saturday night on his edge. But
it certainly wouldn't ruin the aesthetics of the hotel room. That's for sure.
See, I get these cheapo LED bulbs. Sometimes when I get it, when I buy a game, it comes with like cheapo LEDs from like about 10 years ago when they first started making LEDs and they're crap. And I just throw them in a bag. It's like, I don't really throw them up and I'm not going to use them. And Jerry has always said, oh, I'll use them. I put them on, you know, games that I'm going to bring to a show because I'm not going to, you know, make a huge restoration piece. I'm just going to sell a game for decent money, but not for full resto money. So I don't care what kind of bulbs are in it. So we call them Jerry bulbs. I said, and here's your bonus bag of Jerry bulbs with your Whirlwind game, Jerry. So he put my Jerry bulbs in his game along with some Bushy bulbs, and he got all he needed to go. And the game played well, so much so that I said, hey, Eric, world champion Eric Stone, before you participate in your tournament, halfway through, you want to come up and play this Whirlwind? So they said, because Jerry wanted to come up, Jerry wanted him to come up and play it and put it in, and I introduced all of them. And of course, Eric said, well, I'll come up there if you got some iced tea for me. He said, no, I have beer, water, and soda. And Eric said, I need iced tea. So I bribed him to come up there with an iced tea later. I said, I'll give you a couple iced tea, just go up there. So he did, and he played. He was on that game for, I don't know, it seemed like an hour. He just couldn't lose. He put up this super high score of, I don't know.
But you guys were doing this like after midnight, right?
Oh, it was like almost 2 a.m.
And nobody in the hotel said anything? Nobody next door? Was anybody next door?
Maybe there probably was, but no one knocked on the
door. I couldn't hear anything in my room. Those rooms were like bunkers. I couldn't hear anything in the hallway, nothing. So it was pretty good. I know Maureen didn't have the same experience.
No, our place where we were on the first floor was all the restored rooms. All was sort of, you know, new beds, new carpeting, whatever. They were all done. The rooms you guys were all the same old rooms. And some of the rooms over there you know,
yeah, we were in the biohazard room,
biohazard area. So
our room had this distinct funk smell, and the end of the hall where we were in the 300 block. I don't know how anybody could even begin to stay in one of those rooms. It was okay. It wasn't great.
But did you get some? We had some pets in our room. We had some lovely earwigs. We named them. They're cute.
I thought I saw a couple of bugs, but the hotel. I mean, the show is great. I had a lot of fun, but that hotel is just a mess. And it come to find out, well, outside my room, I had a excavator. They were tearing up, which I later found out from Levy, Naaman, that there was a miniature golf course out there, I guess, that looked like it came out of a Stephen King movie. I can't even imagine what that looked like, but it was probably a pretty good description. Did you remember ever seeing this before? I never stayed in the hotel before, so that was a first for me.
What did he describe it as?
He described it as a miniature golf course out of a Stephen King movie.
Yeah, kind of like, no.
How about he called it creepy golf? Which was probably pretty accurate.
Wasn't there a video game back in the 90s about going to some kind of carnival or something? It's like a carnival, but it's evil carnival, something like that. It's something like that. Yeah.
I just saw that game. Somebody listed the games that they had at a 4th of July party, and that was one of them. So I'm guessing, was that a video game?
Video game back in the 90s.
Okay. So Eric ended up blowing up the game, from what I understand. Is that correct?
Yeah, the first one he put up was 35. Then he went there again later on, right before the whole place, when it played better. But he played it first when it wasn't playing well. He couldn't get multi-ball because switches weren't working right. He kept getting robbed. And he goes, "Yep, this is what happens to me every time. The games treat me wrong." It's, you know, it's like, Eric, it's not all about you. Don't worry. It's the game. It's the switches. You know, it's like, so he spent some more time in it the next day. Then Eric went back up, and instead of getting like 35, it got like 65 million, which is an insane score in that game. He maxed out the, what was it called? Whatever the whirlwind bonus is. He maxed that out where you couldn't go any higher. He just kept getting this weird sound came out of the game every time he went around these loops he kept doing. He dials himself right in. So,
While we're on Eric, let's jump ahead a little bit to Saturday. Eric made it into the finals. Obviously, you and I did not. He was a top eight player, so we got a bye. And I believe we talked about, or at least I did, we thought we would interview Eric at some point in time during the show. Well, as things go, they don't always work out the way you would like. And Eric ended up losing the first game in the finals. Is that correct?
He played, it wasn't the first game in the finals. No, he was playing and doing okay. I think it was like win one, lose one, I think. And I think it was best of five or something like that. I thought back and forth match play. And it came the other, but he never got a chance to choose. Oh, no, I know why. No, his problem was he was getting pissed off because he's supposed to be able to choose a game that he wanted because he was top pick, but every game he wanted to pick, you're not allowed to wait for your game. And every game he wanted was someone was on it, so he had to choose something else he didn't want to play.
Ah,
yeah, and that so messed he him was up for picking a time.
Second choice rather than first choice.
Yeah, well,
the long and short of it is he ended up losing, and I believe you told me, right? He ended up losing, and you guys went out to dinner.
Well, yeah, and I record a really funny conversation with him. He wasn't so funny on his aspect. It's funny because, you know, for different reasons. But the thing was really killer. I sort of jinxed him because before the tournament, before his finals, I go, yeah, let's just hope you don't get on Doodlebug. Because he goes, oh, he said, I hate that game. The game sucks. It shouldn't be in the tournament. There's so many ways to lose in that game. It's just a luck box. It sucks, you know. And he'll play anything, but he hates that game. Well, guess what he lost on? Doodlebug. He he just like house ball after house ball, couldn't do shit on that game. He lost on. He was so pissed off. he just wound up just, he just got out of there. He just, you know, said, you know, gone.
Well, I was out in the parking lot. I was driving to go get a sandwich and I saw him and I'm like, what the heck is he doing outside? The tournament's going on. And then I said to myself, uh-oh. Mm-hmm. And you confirmed it later on. You guys went to dinner and then he just split, right?
Well, yeah, he went. Yeah, he went home. He wanted to go home. And I said, but I want to go to dinner with you guys first. Because he had no reason. If he's not in the tournament, he's out. He has no reason to be there. It's his reason for being is being in a tournament and winning. If he's not doing that, he's just going to go. So
he must have been bummed because I'm sure he's also counting the quarters, so to speak, saying, oh, you know, I'm going to come out of this with some money. He probably put maybe $50 in his pocket if he was lucky.
Yeah, if he was lucky. He came away with something like for qualifying, but that's about it.
He at least got a glass, I'm sure.
He got a glass.
Nice pint glasses they'll never use.
Yes, Maureen saw him with the glass, and Maureen goes, uh-oh, he got a glass. That's not a good sign.
Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't take it out to the parking lot and smash it.
Yeah, he was fit to be tied. I got some great, I can submit later some great interview with him. But the problem is it's a loud restaurant, so there might be some golden, I'll give you one of the golden moments there. And I give him some crap. I kind of, you know, I'll tweak him because I know I can, and, you know, all in good fun, because he'll tweak me back, you know. So especially when he's down like that, and I said, well, Eric, you know, you do, you know, drive that, when you come back to New Hampshire, you drive that cab, right, with your buddy there, you know, with Craig, right? Craig was a cab company. So, you know, there's always cab driving for you instead of pinball. It sounds like you're good at that, maybe not pinball so much. And he just went, "Rrr."
I had a couple of cool things happen to me. I don't know what day it was. It doesn't matter. Sitting in the lobby for whatever reason. Who comes walking through but Steve Ritchie. And there are a bunch of people there. He walks right over to me, shakes my hand, says hello. I said, hello, Steve, how are you? And he just keeps on walking. And everybody's kind of looking at me going, who the hell are you?
Right.
Didn't say anything to anybody else. Just walked through. There was, you know, probably a dozen people there. Everybody's like, wow. And the same thing happened with Todd Tuckey. He saw me and he started yelling at me like, hey, how are you? I'm like, I'm good, Todd. How are you? I'm like, I barely know either one of these people.
He probably knows you
before, but
you're on a world famous classic pinball podcast, George.
I would like to believe that, but after I dissed Steve the last time saying I need a megaphone to talk to him, he was nice to me. So that was cool. I have a bone to pick with you.
All right, pick the bone.
You made a statement. Oh, I know where it was. It was in one of the threads, and I don't remember. Oh, it was in the Ghetto Wind thread. You said that, oh, George doesn't play ramp games. Well, guess what? I played a lot of ramp games at this show. I had my buddy Jim from Cape Cod join me, and I said, well, you know, he's got to play all the newer games. So I already know the answer to this, but I'll ask it anyway. Did you have a chance to play Toy Story?
I had a chance, but I didn't.
Okay. I actually played it.
Okay.
I thought it was okay. I really liked that jump ramp thing that they have in that game. And I got it a couple of times, but I got the mode to get it, but I never was able to get the ball over the jump ramp because it's set for like 3 seconds. You have one shot at it, which I thought was kind of a drag, but that was okay. The call outs were good. I guess they actually hired, what's his name? Allen. No. I keep wanting to say Steve Allen, wrong Steve. Help me. What's his first name?
Tim Allen?
Tim Allen. Yeah. They hired Tim Allen for a lot of the call outs in the game. And I thought that was pretty good.
Tom Hanks wanted to know.
I think that's basically an FU to Disney.
Tom Hanks wanted no part of it. Yeah.
If you recall, he used to have a TV show on ABC.
Yeah. Right.
Total time. It got canceled.
Okay.
He had a long run. He also was in the original Toy Story movie.
Yes, he was. Which he is
no longer part of.
Well, when did he leave it, though? He was in 1, 2, and 3, right?
I've only seen 1, so I have no idea. But my point is,
yeah,
he's no longer part of the Disney family. So right. I think this was his quote-unquote revenge to get back at Disney and say, hey, you know, they hired me. I'm going to do the call-outs because everybody wants to hear me. I couldn't even tell you who's the actor who's the new Buzz Lightyear. Right?
Crickets. Don't know. Very forgettable film, and it's failing at the box office. So that says a lot right there. Not doing too well with that.
And, you know, the controversy. But I think overall, the one thing I saw about the game, and I'll just leave it at this, if you want to listen to everybody drone on about this game, I saw a lot of kids playing it. This is not aimed at us. This is aimed at kids. Kids were all over the game all weekend, from what I could see. And they had 3 games there. So, you know, it's okay. I'll just say that.
Okay.
But I also played a lot of other things. I played your game.
What's my game?
Rush.
Okay.
I played that a lot. You got a really good game. I mean, I couldn't hear it, but playability, that's a fun game. I had a lot of fun. I didn't know what I was doing, and I racked up some pretty good games.
That's the best way.
That's a pretty good game. I'm going to continue down the ramp trail. I dissed Mandalorian. That's a fun game, too. With the spaceship dingus, I don't know what you call that thing. The space
the upper dolls. Right thing, that little thing
the thing right in the middle. It looks like a set of testicles hanging down.
Okay,
you know what I'm talking about?
No.
After we get off, take a look at a picture. Okay. I don't know what you call this thing because I've never seen Mandalorian, but that's a fun game too. I played that a lot. There was nobody playing it, so. Played a lot of it. Godzilla, still one of my favorites. Another good game, Cactus Canyon. Did you get to play that?
I played before. I'm kind of underwhelmed by that game. I never saw the point of it.
It's kind of a one-trick pony, but it was a fun. That's another fun. I mean, if you could only own one game and you wanted a family-friendly game, it's a pretty decent game.
Okay.
I actually got to play Rocky and Bullwinkle.
And what's your impression?
That game is not that bad. You made it much worse.
All right, I got a question. Did the Nell saw thing work? Usually that's broken.
I never got it to work, so my guess is no.
Okay.
I would have liked to have seen that thing work.
Yep.
Okay, why doesn't it ever work?
I think it's a cheap mech inside it with a belt and something else. It's cheaply made, and I think it just breaks. I've only really worked on one of these, and it was broken. And I looked at like why it was broken. It's like, wow, this looks kind of cheaply made. So I figure if this one's broken, there's a lot more of them that are broken.
Starring that supersonic speedster, Rocket J. Squirrel, with his pal Bullwinkle the Moose.
I also got to play some pinball with Benny and with PJ.
Oh, nice.
We were hanging out, and they're like, hey, you want to go play some pinball? So we went to the New Hampshire Pinball Club room,
yeah,
and I guess the Western Mass Pin Club. They were kind of together.
Sure.
And we got to play quite a few games in there, but the one that stood out, because you don't see it often, I said, oh, we got to play this. Is Elvis? That's not a bad game. That's not a bad game either.
That game is pretty fun. I've actually played that game. It's kind of rare. Not a lot of them out there. And I've had 2 customers that have that game, and I've worked on them. And usually they're lightly played. Usually they just need a big shop out job, but they're not like trash typically when I find them.
No, most of the games in that room were okay. Some better than others, but. You know, a fun diversion from, you know, from playing all the vendor games, which I played a lot of. Didn't play a lot of stuff in the main hall or the free play area. And actually that room didn't have as many pins as I think even last November. Seemed like one whole area didn't have any pins in it at all. Did you find the same thing?
Yeah, it was kind of light. light in that free play room this time. So much so what they did was a smart move. I think it was on Friday night or one of those, I think maybe it was Friday night. They decided to move games and space them farther apart to make it fill up better, to make it look more full instead of having empty spaces. So they filled the room better by having games spaced out a little more. And that was actually aesthetically looked better. So that's what they did.
Well, they should have taken a cue from the Pimbrew Fest people, because I thought their room configurations, how they had everything, you know, spaced out for a variety of reasons, was well laid out. And I think they could have probably accomplished that because they didn't have, you know, as many pins as normal, which is a shame. But overall, pretty, you know, there were some games I would have liked to have played, but they were always being played in the free play area.
Yeah, there were some nice restorations in there. And, you know, again, Dave Mitrando, the beautiful game he brought was fantastic to play. Both of them were nice to play. That Bally Cross Country 1963, rare game, very fun, great looker. In fact, Steve Ritchie came up to Dave and said, "Wow, this is a nice game. You made a nice game here." So Steve Ritchie played that game a lot in the free play area. Well, Dave.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. And he won. I gave him a ribbon for it. He won a ribbon for that game.
Well, you want to talk about that? You want to talk about?
Sure.
Do you want to talk about the ribbons, or do you want to talk about the story leading up to the ribbons?
The story. Right. Yeah.
Dave, I only have a couple items left. One in particular that was on the Pentastic thread. A gentleman by the name of Alberto, I think, wasn't he one of your previous winners? Maybe not.
I
think he was. It sounds familiar. It doesn't matter. Alberto, yeah. Whoever you are. He was looking for the best in show winners this year. And Dave H. chimed in and said, usually at Pentastic, the people judging, quote unquote, the best in show hold up releasing the winners to promote their podcast. Hopefully that isn't the case. Now, you can't ask the question in a very polite manner rather than an accusatory manner. You couldn't just say, "Hey, could you please post the winners of the Pentastic contest? We'd like to see them." Great. Nice way of asking. Instead, you got to be smarmy because you're holding it over us like the sword of Damocles that we held back the winners for a day when we first did our podcast because we were trying to get some traction. Okay, you got your fame, you got your fortune. Haters are going to hate. I know you probably have a little bit of a history with this person. I don't really know him. I know of him. But man, here, you got your 5 minutes. You happy?
Yeah, way back when we first started our podcast, he was the one out there on a Pinside thread that was all pissy that we didn't release the winners on Pinside. I said, "Oh, check with our podcast when you can see who won." And then after the podcast, or then we were going to post them on there, and you know, and put that kind of thing. So he was all pissy, and he basically went and listened to our podcast, and then posted the winners after listening to our podcast. And say there, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, he's an angry guy. You know, I really feel kind of sorry for him, especially since we corrected that and going forward from that time frame, just to make it fair for people, so they don't have to listen to our podcast, even though they should, because they can hear the rest of the story about the winners and so forth. But you know, whatever. We said no in the future. I'm not going to post it on Pinside. I'm going to post them to the Pentastic website. And that way you have to go to the Pentastic website for everything. Go there. If you really want to see.
And you did do that, right? For this show?
We did it for every show since that little spat right there. We have done that. We have not modified from there. But for some reason, he just has an axe to grind against me or you.
No,
or
he has a hair across his ass. That's what he has.
I think he's a very angry guy. I think he's angry at the world for whatever reasons, for his whatever shortcomings he has. You know, someone pissed in his cornflakes a long time ago. The guy has issues. So I hope the best for him. And actually, I really do pray for the guy that actually finds help and and happiness in his life, but he just seems very bitter. So I just hope he, you know, straightens himself out.
Man, if we get a little problem up here, that MiG really screwed him up. I don't think he can make it back.
You're okay, Cougar. Just stay on my wing. I'll take you all the way in. Just stay with me.
I saw a guy do this in a toothpaste ad once. Ta-da!
The winners are as follows. Maureen and I did our best to filter everything out who won, and we came up with best antique was Frank Rothdusch for his 1952 Gottlieb Queen of Hearts. In 1960s was Dave Mitrando for his 1963 Bally Cross Country. 1970s EM, Dave Mitrando for his 1978 Gottlieb Neptune. 1970s Solid State, Brian Hawkins for his 1977 Bally Matahari. And 1980s, Brian Urick for his 1988 Williams Swords of Fury. So those are the ones that that we personally went through and judged. We couldn't do the whole spectrum of all the games, across, you know, the newer ones and so forth. So we left that up to, you know, some other teams and some other fantastic people, and also comments from people that went to the show, people that played games and that kind of thing. It's kind of a people's choice kind of deal. And so what the fantastic crew came up with were these two games were like for where they were the people's choice games. So the people's choice games were a 2011 Stern Tron, beautiful Tron that Sandra and Mark Antonucci, who have a great business, Pinnovators, and they had this in their booth. Everybody got to play it, got to have a subwoofer on it. It really was spectacular. And it's his pride and joy. He ain't selling it unless you get some big money, you know. And then for custom, it was Dino Gaspari out in I think he's up in Montreal. He brought a Jaws, which is a 2022 retheme of Silver Ball Mania.
I actually played that game.
Had the soundtrack of Jaws. It had blood, you know, fake blood on the lockdown bar in the cabinet, and it was really well done retheme. At least visually. Visually, it was, you know, great. Playability, you know, it's a Silver Ball Mania.
As our audience knows, we are not big fans of Silver Ball Mania. And
this is all
that game just proved it again.
He commissioned an artist to do the work. This wasn't like photoshopped artwork. This is actually commissioned artist.
No, it was a beautiful looking game.
It's the back glass, all everything. Yeah.
It's just I didn't, you know. Why Silver Ball Mania? I guess you had one.
He had one. It was probably cheap to do, you know, right. A very basic game, you know.
But very, very well done. I actually played it. That was a lot of fun. Unless you have anything else to talk about the winners, I only have one other thing we haven't talked about, and that was Saturday night, the band. What'd you think of Limelight, the Rush tribute band?
I think the band Limelight, they were very, very well done. They did a great Rush representation. The people, yeah, it was Rush. Yeah, Limelight is Rush. Who do you think? This was not last year. My cohort here says, that wasn't Rush. Oh, yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was.
It was. So,
no, I thought they were good.
Yeah, it was really, really good. I did like, if I had to, you know, go choose between this year's band and last year's band, I would say the Guns N' Roses band edged them out a little bit because they're a little more go in the crowd, get personal, a little more, I don't know, they just seemed a little more fun-loving.
I didn't see the Guns N' Roses band, so I'll reserve comment, but I guess you weren't disappointed that there wasn't the marching band on Friday night. I know how much you love marching bands.
I love them. Yeah.
You better tune in to the end of this particular podcast.
Oh, I can't wait, George.
I'm not going to tell you. You're going to have to listen.
You're going to tweak me, aren't you?
Something. Oh, yes, I am. Oh, yes.
Can't wait.
You're gonna love the outro song. You're gonna love it.
I'm sure I will. Can't wait to listen. It's gonna be fantastic. Let's see. So is that all for the show? Wise?
No, there's one other thing. Okay. I didn't go to them, but I know you did. I mentioned one of the people. You went to the seminar signings, didn't you? And you got to talk to a couple of people.
I did. So I realized Jim Patlin was going to be there, and that's pretty much. I knew Steve Ritchie was going to be there too, and some other people.
Wasn't Borg there too?
Borg was there too. Borg was a last minute guest. There's supposed to be someone else there that did the Rush game. I forget who, but someone else was going to be there instead, but they couldn't make it or they couldn't fly. And John Borg drove all the way out. He drove all the way out to go to this show.
From where? Chicago?
From Chicago. He drove.
Wow.
Amazing. You know, talk about, you know, above and beyond. Real nice. I got to talk to him for a while. So I went up to him and had him sign a Rush LE flyer for me. And I talked to him for a while. And I talked to him while I had his ear. I talked to him about the Blue Marge, about the idiot sandwich, about that stupid scoop thing. And I said, yeah, you know, have you heard much about that? Because I'm going to tell you that the fix for that is that Ninja Camp's, you know, Rubbermaid scoop thing they got going on. That's a really good fix. I put that on. I didn't do the Stern fix that you guys did because I don't like it. It doesn't look terrible in my opinion. No, nothing against you, John, but this is the way to go. And he said, oh, that's good. That's good feedback. You know? So I gave him constructive criticism on it. And I said, but you made a really nice game. You know, I like how things play, and that scoop thing fixed a lot of issues with the game by having that Rubbermaid situation on it.
Did you tell him that you never play the game?
No, I didn't tell him that. No,
I've played your game more than you've played your game.
Probably at this rate.
No, yeah. I have. Trust me, I have. Okay. Went to town on it at the show. I played a lot of games on it.
Wow. Good for you, George. You're going to be a ramper. Maybe I'll sell you my LE.
No. I knew you were going to say that. No, I'm not buying your game. I'm going to come over and play it, and I'm sure it'll be at shows in the future. There's one other person I want to mention.
Well, I'll tell you more about this. I got more sign-in things. I get the sign-in thing.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So more sign. So basically, I ahead of time, Mike McGordy has a Centaur, and he was talking to me about it, and I said, I'm going to go get things signed. And he said, oh, can you do something for me? And I said, sure. So I printed out, I made up cards, like apron cards for all the games that I had by Jim Patla. There's like about, I think it's Mata Hari. I had Centaur. And a couple of games, I forget. Whatever they
doesn't
are.
Matter. So you had him signing for.
I had
like
a stack
minutes.
Of cards, and then I had.
Oh, he must have loved you.
Well, I had a stack, and I said, "Well, how? I never go to these signing things. They just wanted to do one. And I figure, well, if he's going to do a couple, whatever. Then I also had some plastics that Mike gave me. Mike McGordy gave me a full plastic set from Centaur, and have him sign one of those. So I brought that with me, and a card for PJ because PJ's got one of his games too, Mata Hari. On top of that, I went up and they said, any questions before the sign-in thing, before the sign stuff, seminar or the whatever it's called, sign things. There are questions to ask for the Jim Patla. So I went up there to the microphone and I started asking some questions and, you know, and I can tell, you know, I started really asking more and more. And all of a sudden I felt like the hook was going to come out and kind of pull me away from the mic.
I thought Marston tried grabbing the microphone from you.
He did. And I did my famous just one more thing.
Just one more thing, please.
Oh boy.
So I got one more thing in there. The last thing got in there was great because Jim really liked it. I said, Jim, on Centaur is very sassy, especially when it says slow, aren't you? Are you responsible for that, Jim? Or how'd they say that is all me? He said, I'm the one that made that game wisecracking at you and kind of giving you guys a bunch of shit. Bad the crowd didn't really realize that. And he didn't never heard that before, I guess, because he thought it was a really good question. So I'm glad they kept me on for that. Then when I finally, the next one down from John Borg was Steve Ritchie. And when I got John Borg to do mine, I quickly left to come back. I said, oh, you know what? I need to go get, I just bought a firepower backlash from Mayfair. So I'm going to go get that on my car bring it in and have Steve Ritchie sign it. So I brought it back in, got back in line, and Steve Ritchie signed it. And Steve was really gracious. He said, oh, yeah, I'll sign anywhere. So pick a spot, Steve. You know, you signed this before. What's the best? I'm going to sign it right in the black sun right here. And he said, you know what? So I'm going to sign it. Get your camera out. And I want you, you know, I advise you, take a picture of me signing. It's going to be worth more money if you get a picture of me doing
it. Oh, right. Because now you can authenticate that it is, in fact, him signing it.
Exactly. So it's like, oh, thanks, Steve. So I did that. And I have a nice picture of him smiling with him signing it. And real nice guy. I told him I have a bunch of his games, or stored a bunch of his games. He does a nice job and that kind of thing. Then on to Jim Patla. Jim Patla was like, you know, older. He just seemed like, you know, showing his age more than Steve. And so I said, well, you know, Jim, honestly, I have a bunch of stuff for you to sign, but, you know, tell me when enough's enough. And just, if you just want to do a couple, that's okay. You know, so I kind of did a mea culpa, you know, if you only want to do a couple, it's all right, but just do a couple of these. So he started going through them, like one, two, like he got to like number six, and I go, oh, is there much more? It's like, hey, check me out anytime you want. It's like, that's good enough. You know, you can stop, you know, don't worry about it. I see Dave Marston eyeing me again. It's like you again.
You know? The disruptor.
Dave disruptor.
Well, let's go back to Firepower, because your customer was there that I got to meet. Scott?
Yeah, Scott. Yeah.
He chewed my ear for like ever.
Really? What do you have to say to you? What was?
You know, this is the problem with doing a recording a week later.
Right.
I don't really remember the conversation. I just remember him talking about games and asking me about games and what should I get next and what does Dave have? And it was just like, oh my God, what kind of sales job did Dave do on him? And now he kind of pushed him over to me. You were talking to somebody else, and nice enough guy. I mean, happy for him, but he was bitten big.
Oh yeah, he's a big
pinball bug. He's just all over it. So he was excited to have that game.
He's a big fan of our podcast, George, too. He's a big fan.
He's going to hear it. So
yeah.
Yeah, no offense. I mean, I just, you know, I had no idea who he was until he said, oh, you know, and then he started quoting things and he started talking about the game and they started talking about you. And I'm like, I've kind of heard all this before, but okay, you know, being polite. And he was all excited. He's looking for his next game, I guess. So whatever you got, he's going to buy.
Oh, yeah. No, I already have it.
He's saving his nickels and dimes to buy the next game.
It's already slated. It's already in the books. He handed me another bag of dough towards it, slowly, kind of a layaway plan. You know, I told him I'm not going to start it for a while. I might start it this Christmas and hope to get it done early next year, but it's going to be a beautiful nine ball when I'm done.
Oh, that's right. That's what he was talking about. Yeah. Okay. The game that we will eventually get to at some point in time.
And I've done a lot of good, well, you know, again, is where, you know, sometimes you do a little too much when you get a little older, you do a little, you know, whatever. And I did a little too much today, but I don't know if it's worth it or whatever, but it is what it is. I cleaned out a lot of my area in my lower level there to make room. So I really want to bring up another lineup downstairs, put up a classic Stern lineup again down there, and or an EM Chime Central lineup down there. But I'm thinking right now to put a Stern lineup down there.
You know what I'm voting for?
Flight 2000.
Well, one.
Stargazer.
Well, that you can always put up. That's a fun game.
Ali?
No, that's okay. No, what's the other, not fire.
Nine ball?
No, the other, not big game. Is there another wide body that I want you to put
up? There's Flight 2000, there's Cheetah, there's big game.
Flight 2000, that's the one.
Yeah, that's the one.
Flight 2000 and nine ball are the two that I want you to put up.
Especially now that I can get the Flight 2000 is brand new enhanced software, and this is not the whole rewrite. This is more like modified to make the game better, like finish writing the rules a little better. That was done. So I'm going to put those new, you know, additional rules in the game, which make the game even cooler. Just like I did with Stargazer as well, to make that game better. So all these classic Sterns have a lot of nice little rule enhancements, let's call them, that I like better than the Arduino board situation. Some people are doing an Arduino board, whole rewrite, whole different game. It's okay. You know, a lot of people like that, but it's not really for me. It kind of changes the game too much for me. I'd rather keep it original, but a little bit enhanced original is where I like these games. You know, kind of keeping the soul of the game, the way the designer intended, but if the designer had more time to tweak rules, that's what this winds up being. So that's what I like.
Okay. You got anything else? I'm done my list. A little longer than I would have thought, but good nonetheless.
I can tell you some other stuff about. I got a call from Herb Silvers the other day on the West Coast. He's been doing.
Well, tell people who might not know who Herb Silvers is. I do.
He's been doing this restoration since, I don't know, maybe the late 80s or maybe earlier, but he's been around forever. And out in Cal, I think near LA, a lot of high-end clientele. He basically chromes everything. He's all, you know, he's like Mr. Cromer. He likes to have everything like beautifully chromed. So it's a showpiece. And, you know, people, you know, his clientele, I think maybe he might not play the game. They probably just put it out there and have it as a look at my beautiful thing kind of thing, like a show car. So that's what he caters to. And he charges a good amount of money for it. But you know, I've never really played his game, so I can't say how well they play, but they look fantastic. So he's been doing it for a long time. In fact, we went to our first pinball fantasy in Las Vegas years ago in 1996, where it was actually his Herb Silver's pinball fantasy, which he ran that show. And we went to that show a couple times out there in the late 90s. So I kind of met him out there way back. And so, but I didn't really know the guy, but I got a call from him and I say, oh, wow. It's like, yeah, I have a client I just sent on Martha's Vineyard. I just sent him restored 1940s gun game and a 1940s baseball pitch and bat game that are all done up, but they didn't survive the trip totally. There's a couple of switches that don't work or something that got them. And this guy on Martha's Vineyard, he's got deep pockets and he wants a whole bunch. You'll have yourself, you know, plenty of work to do if you want to take this on, because he's going to get more and more games from me and whoever. And he has a huge game room on his house, his mansion in Martha's Vineyard. And I said, well, I don't know. And he said, you can name your price. He will actually fly you over to Martha's Vineyard. You can he'll take a private flight and fly you there.
Oh, you got to go do this.
Put you up. And, you know,
you got to go do this just for the story.
I know I'm tempted. And then I realized he asked Stu. I don't even know how he knows Stu, but Stu would be the guy to go, because Stu, I could get it done, but Stu would know it better than me. Stu could probably do it.
So what did Stu say?
Stu didn't want to do it. It's too much time. It'd be way too much time to deal with it, you know. And he runs a restaurant, so he works on pinball, but like quickie ones. He doesn't want to go to Martha's Vineyard and do all that stuff. So I don't know. Right now, I didn't really get back to him. I kind of thought I have someone else, but he already talked to Stu anyway. So, and then, you know, especially right now, I got other things going on, which I can't get there anyway. You know, life gets in the way and so forth. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. If he calls me again, if he bugs me again about it, I might do something with it. But
well, I just don't know. If nothing else, I mean, it's a foot in the door. Not to scoop Herb, but you might be able to sell a few more games to this deep pocket individual.
Oh, I probably.
Or maybe he has some other deep pocket friends out on Martha's Vineyard who'd like some vintage games as well.
I probably could, but they all got to get in line though. I already got like a year and a half out.
Money money talks. Money talks.
I mean, I got some people waiting for 2 years right now, and I'm definitely trying to get them done by the end of this. The end of this year, I want them done. You know, I hate people waiting that long, but just so much stuff going on, and never mind, you know, life stuff and pinball stuff. It's hard to get it all in.
You can't be taking all these fancy vacations. Get back to work.
Yeah, right. Yeah, get back to work. I know. Yeah, you got to live sometime too. Even though I love working on pinball, sometimes you got to stop and smell the roses, which is what I'm doing right now. I'm smelling roses on the water here. Birds chirping.
Okay, don't rub it in. Okay,
it's nice.
Yeah,
it's nice, George. If you have the means. It is so choice from whatever the movie that's from.
Well,
Ferris Bueller. That's what it's from. Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I'll make a note there. What else did I get? Stern. Oh yeah. So then I got a call from Orange County Pinball. They sent a
Orange County, New York, or Orange County, California.
California, another California reached out to me. They have a game, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Stern game, LE, that they sent to this huge Ninja Turtles fan in Rhode Island, and it had a big problem with the van not locking balls like it's supposed to, and kept shooting balls and just. And I looked up on the web and people said there's a screw that falls out. And I talked to Stern. And so they said, yeah, I can come out there, you know. So basically I went there on the way to Rhode Island here. I stopped there. I thought it was going to be like a, you know, multi-hour call. Stern sent me a whole little how to disassemble this whole area and get in there. It looked like just, I don't know, 20 pages worth of stuff. It's like, oh boy, to get to this one screw, you do all this stuff. So I was armed and prepared for anything. I had the screws I needed, a special another screw that's better than the one they had in there, the original one. It's a modified deal. And I went in there and actually found out it was just the coil underneath dropped out. The screws fell out of this coil, and it was a simple fix. So I went in there, did it. Game worked great.
Simple for you, but not for the homeowner.
No homeowner
had no clue, right?
But no clue, but. I
don't know what to do. And
Orange County was going to pay for it anyway, so he didn't care because he paid up for the game. This guy had Ninja Turtle curio cabinet full of all the Ninja Turtle toys back in the day in this room. He had a Ninja Turtle video game in this room. He is
reliving his childhood,
and he's got a couple kids that love Ninja Turtles, really cute, and they love the game. And so I said, hey, while I'm here, since you know. I got a little bit of time and I brought some nice rubber. Let's get rid of all this black rubber on the game because it looks hideous. And let's do a little bit of a tune-up while we're here. So I put in some colored posts. I put in clear rubber rings. And we did a little bit of cleaning. I tightened his flippers up a little bit loose. I did a little kind of little spritzing on the game. And he came back upstairs. He goes, wow, this game looks even better now. This looks great. I wish it came like this from the first place from Stern. It's like, yeah, Stern doesn't do that. He just put black rubber because, I don't know.
It's cheap and easy. It's
cheap and easy. So this is like it. So he said, oh, this is way better. So he loved it. And he basically said, oh, I want to, I definitely want to look at your website and give you a nice comment and this kind of thing. So I said, oh, I appreciate that, So, yeah, so that's cool. What else did we do there? Those are two things. Yeah, Stern, I get calls from Stern once in a while, too, to take care of warranty issues sometimes in their games. I'll get a call from them, too. So it's kind of cool being in game room guys, they call me. I have a Stranger Things they sent to somebody that's having an issue, so they reached out to me. So it's kind of nice being called by all these outfits to do some mop up, for things that go awry.
You're busy. Certainly, yeah. The economy has not affected you as of yet.
No, as of yet, yeah. It works in my favor, I guess. It's my clientele. They're not really hurt by $5 gas yet anyway. So it works out.
Doesn't sound like it, especially the person out on Martha's Vineyard. Well, yeah. If you don't have anything else, I'd like to cut here.
Sure.
We're recording on 4th of July, believe it or not, folks. No fireworks today here. I like all my fingers. I especially need them to play pinball. So, we won't be, igniting anything today. You were talking about seeing a great display last night in Rhode Island near whatever that bridge is. So that sounds cool.
Yeah, it's the bridge that connects Jamestown, Rhode Island to Newport. And it lit up in red, white, and blue last night with fireworks going right off in front of it, right in front of us in our porch here. And I had my little Bluetooth speaker and I played John Philip Sousa appropriate patriotic music while it was going off, and I cranked it up loud for all the neighbors to hear. And I had bottle rockets, and so I was kind of helping the show. So
there you go.
People like that.
Well, I'm going to wish everybody a happy 4th of July, a little belated. When you hear this, try to get this thing out in the next couple of days. Hopefully, I don't have to do too much editing. And I'll see you when you get back from your vacation. How's that?
That sounds good to me.
So everybody be well, happy flipping, and we'll talk soon.
Everybody have a happy and blessed Independence Day. America. See you, George.
Yep. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's halftime in Ohio Stadium with the Pride of the Buckeyes. In 1968, this Toronto, Canada trio, known individually as Geddy Lee, Alex Langland, and Neil Peart, and collectively as Rush, formed one of classic rock era's most indispensable bands, but that eclectic sound ceased nearly 2 years ago with the death of legendary drummer Peart. Today, we pay tribute to this famous band as we open our show with selections from their breakthrough album, 2112.
Dave!
Who?
Dave! D-A-V-E! Yeah, Dave!
Dave!
Right.